March 31st, 2009. I think that this should be developed somewhat in collaboration with the departments working with water, and the proposed 08 monitoring should, it would be very good to have some feedback on that to the proponent. And I don't exactly know what forum that would take, because it has to happen pretty quickly before they set up for this upcoming field season, which is really only a few months away. Some examples on that would just be for the 08 monitoring, that we would like to see sediment variability better characterized. They've been using samples that are all mixed together, so you don't have individual samples at their stations, which would show the range of variability. So I think a little further work on individual samples would be good. And we don't have a sense of winter water quality. I think that would be something they should get before the open pits start. So over, like, probably next April. And there may be some other comments on the AEMP when I've had a chance to go through it properly, and I'm sure DFO and others would, excuse me, have a few comments. So there's a lot on monitoring for the environmental monitoring. The next slide is to do with the site water quality monitoring. And we received an update in Appendix C that had a table consolidating all the different requirements. And so we had identified a few specific concerns with the parameters proposed, and the intervention has details. And I'm just going to give you a few examples of the things rather than go through all of them. For example, the diffuser discharge stations, CM4 and CM5, don't have quite a broad enough suite of analyses planned for them. I think they need to get more parameters because this is what characterizes the effluents, and this is what we're going to be looking at to say why are we seeing whatever we're seeing in the receiving environment. And the timing of that should be in advance of discharge as well as during discharge. I did want to flag a mistake I made. Second one here, my goodness. The tailing storage facility CM8 parameters, I'd flagged that they should include analysis for nitrogen compounds, and I said, but should not require cyanide compounds. That's wrong. CM5 should not require cyanide compounds. I just wanted to correct that on the record. There's the question of the waste rock pile monitoring. They only propose to monitor dissolved metals. We would like to see totals done at least annually as well, to see what the most metals available might be. I appreciate that their models did use dissolved and their comparisons are on that basis. However, we don't have guidelines for dissolved metals, and most of our comparisons are done on total metals. There are closure monitoring aspects outlined in the intervention. I appreciate that those will be for the next license, but they can be planned for in the closure and reclamation plan as it's updated in this license. Going on to effluent quality criteria, it's been a nice iterative process between the proponent and stakeholders, us mainly, as far as discussions on what we should have as end of pipe criteria and why. And by and large, we agree on most of them. There are some things, though, that EC feels need to be a little more conservative. Among those, I would say the main one would be that turbidity be regulated. We also feel that the chloride levels proposed are higher than we would like to see. And we would like to see, probably as a management plan rather than regulated, but there be some duration specified for surface runoff TSS. So that it's, I expect this proponent would address any ongoing surface runoff that caused erosion, but just so that there are time frames associated with that. Yeah, I guess I'll jump into turbidity. That's kind of the big one here, and I hope, please stay with me, this will take a little while. First off, I want to say that, as we all know, the lakes up here are almost distilled water. They're ultra-oligotrophic, so they're really, really pristine and clean. And we want to keep them that way. This was the way the people who live in the Northwest Territories felt about Lac de Gras. And so when it came to the Diavik water license, turbidity was put in as a regulated parameter when it came to dewatering the areas behind their dikes. A very similar situation to this. I just want to go over a little bit the difference between total suspended solids and turbidity and how they're measured, just so that's clear. If you have some sand and you have some baby powder or talcum powder, one's kind of coarse and one's kind of fine, mix them all together, put them in a bottle of water and shake it all up. So the fine stuff is going to float and the heavy or sand is going to sink. But we don't know how much sand we have in our water. So I've got a sponge here, and I know how much my sponge weighs. If I pour my sample through my sponge and then weigh the sponge with the sample, I'll know how much of that would be the sand. Basically, that's a very simplified explanation of how we measure total suspended solids. They're poured through a filter. Things of a certain size stay in the filter and can be measured. The part that's turbidity that I'm concerned about is the part that goes through the filter and stays in the water. The tiny clay-sized particles will float for days to weeks. They don't like to settle out. They stay suspended. When they do that, they prevent the sunlight from going through the lake water and reduce what's available for algae and algae that live both in the water column and in the sediments to photosynthesize. So we want to minimize that effect to the extent possible. If we were going to only regulate total suspended solids, you could put a lot of turbidity out into the lake before you hit your total suspended solids limit. I pulled out a few numbers from the Diavik dike dewatering monitoring. Early on, when they first started dewatering, both turbidity and total suspended solids were less than one, and they're both the same. As they got further into it, the TSS was still about twice what the turbidity was and was still under their license limits. As I got closer to the bottom of the lake sediments, the suspended fines increased till they were more than the total suspended solids. And it was actually the turbidity that was regulated and had them stop dewatering. And of course the dewatering, they still were able to get 60% of the lake water out even before, without hitting 10 NTUs, which is the measure of turbidity. And at that time they'd hit 7 milligrams per liter of TSS. So I just wanted to make the point too that while turbidity is often used as a surrogate for total suspended solids, in the Diavik experience, they were pretty close to 1-to-1, but at the beginning, one was way higher than the other, and at the end, it had flipped. So it's not a real accurate way to know exactly what your TSS is. And the reason for that, of course, is that your sediments are changing as you draw down your lake, what you get changes. Okay, so enough about turbidity, probably more than enough. The other aspect for license limits is the chloride that we haven't quite come to agreement on. And we note that chronic effects can be seen at levels of chloride that are about 313 milligrams per liter to 500 milligrams per liter. That won't be an issue at the edge of the mixing zone. We acknowledge that the edge of the mixing zone is going to be quite low. If it was 2,000 milligrams per liter as proposed, it would be 32 milligrams per liter, which shouldn't be an issue. However, the predictions for chloride in the document water quality predictions, I think the highest one I saw for Portage was 420 milligrams per liter, so I'm not convinced that we really need to go as high as 2,000. I know they want a margin of safety there. But I think that might be more than what is needed. I was just going to add a comment that we are okay with the higher nitrate levels that are suggested. I looked at the benthic invertebrates that live in the area and some of the zooplankton, and they would be fairly robust to that.